I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Hamilton comes out. Is he ahead of Max Verstappen? No, he is not. Max Verstappen pulls the undercut on Lewis Hamilton.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. Back again for another episode. This time we're reviewing the French Grand Prix. Previewing. I've got ahead of myself there slightly by a week. It's been a long day. But there we go. I'm joined as always by my excellent co-host, Jesse Billington. How are you?
This should give you a really good example. It's a hot day, so I'm having a cold beer. I'm not doing too bad. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Warm as well, but sadly do not have an alcoholic beverage in front of me. But we'll fix that later. We are not joined by Ellie Mae Taylor this week, as she couldn't be here. But we are joined by a very special guest, Vicky Piria. How are you?
Hi. Hello, everyone. I'm glad you're enjoying your British summer weather.
This is all 2 days of it. That's it. It's genuinely going to be raining on Wednesday. So that's it. That's summer over.
It's just been so hot in Italy. It's unbelievable, unbearable. So I do envy you.
Yeah, we get 2 days of high 30s and then it goes back to just sort of being quite stereotypically British. So at least we get a respite from it.
Yeah.
We need it more than everyone else does, to be fair. We're not used to it for too long.
I know. I remember every time I race in Silverstone, it's just a mess. It's always cold. There's always something wrong. It's going to be raining. And yeah, here we've got the opposite problem, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So we need to try and find that balance, which is something we're trying to do with the news this week, because we've been talking about Spa maybe not being on the calendar next year, which would be very sad. But now the Belgian government, the Walloons, have stepped in to try and help protect it. So that's good news, I think.
I do think it's a very good news. Obviously, we can see Formula One going towards the direction of, you know, a lot of American races coming up, and you know, obviously, that's where the money is at the moment, the interest is. Also, thanks to Netflix, probably. I heard that Netflix really helped boost a bit the, you know, American appreciation for Formula One. But I do think, okay, good racing, new racing, but you need to keep the tradition. And Spa is definitely the best tradition for any driver. So it would be really pretty if they tick it off.
We're very much of the mind here of places like Spa, Monza, Silverstone. They should just always be there. It shouldn't really be up for debate. It's just keep some of it, at least.
Absolutely. It's all about balance. So, okay, new races. Miami, very cool. Loved it. But then that's enough. Like, we still need Spa and all of them.
Yeah, it's the influx of American and Middle Eastern circuits seems to be dominating the calendar and really pushing out or putting a lot of the other more traditional circuits to the peripheries. But it's nice to see the Belgian government also sort of stepping in and going, no, this is a good thing. We enjoy having a Belgian Grand Prix and we want it to stick around. And it comes at a tricky time because South Africa edges ever closer, but I think it's falling into a different sector of the calendar. I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
One for the other, especially no. When you've got multiple Americans or multiple Middle Eastern ones on the calendar potentially.
And it's nice to see South Africa and Africa as a continent coming back to the calendar. It truly sort of does give it that proper sort of global sort of Grand Prix presence. It does make it a big world series. But yeah, I'm very much still in the mindset, as much as I really want to see Kyle Army make a return, still very much in the mindset that if push comes to shove, we'll just keep Spa, to be honest.
I was listening to another F1 podcast earlier, and one of the guys on there very amusingly said that without Spa, what else has Belgium got to offer us? We've got to keep Spa for nothing else.
Chips, really good beer, and chocolate.
I knew you'd have something for that.
True.
Away from that as well, slightly F1 related, just because we don't quite know what they're up to. McLaren signed Alex Palou for potentially IndyCar, but they keep giving drivers test drives in their F1 cars and that are in IndyCar. So what do we think they're up to? Vicky, have you got any ideas?
Well, Danny Rick has not, I think, hasn't been enjoying too much his McLaren days. I don't know. I get the feeling that it's probably, I mean, as a driver, I understand there's a lot of money involved, but you, I guess you get to a stage where you just fed up of being number two, and it's been kind of happening. So I wonder if he's on to something new. You know, you've got a new
hybrid car. Switch to IndyCar maybe, or
I mean, he loves America, doesn't he? And he loves staying there and everything. And he could really be a number one there. Maybe he's, you just have to see how much he's willing to push through this moment. But it's it can't be easy. It's very tough. And it's tough for Lando Norris, so it's even more tough for him. And I do expect him to, I mean, if, to be honest, if I was him, I'd just leave, just because probably he'd be even happier in other series. But then, you know, there's a lot of things involved, and there are a lot of drivers, very good drivers, that are thriving to get up. And, you know, maybe McLaren can find a cheaper driver that drives us just as fast, if not faster. So
there's another Australian waiting to get into F1 that everyone keeps like wanting to
put. I know, exactly. So like, why would they want to keep him? So he's expensive. He's not bringing what he's supposed to. I'm sorry. I feel sorry for him, but you know.
Well, we all love him, but it's just, we don't want to have this conversation, but we've also got to.
But it is. It is a fact. And for sure, he can just find a better dimension in America. I mean, it looks like Grosjean is really enjoying IndyCar and stuff. He's up and down, but you know, he's probably found a bit more his habitat. And yeah, so maybe it's just a different type of, you know, racing that could help.
Talking of leaving, Jesse, Michael Massey's officially left, when quite a quiet kind of exit as well, just kind of statement, I'm leaving, bye. And yeah, that was it.
Yeah, he was rather phased out of the sport. He was shuffled off to like a sort of backroom office job in the FIA for a while after the end of the 2021 season that so famously came to a head of simply him tossing a coin. As far as we're aware, he might as well have done that for that sort of decision. But yeah, he's then was sort of shuffled off to the quiet back rooms of the FIA and now has, as far as we're aware, left of his own accord, although I wouldn't be surprised if potentially within the FIA there's been other factors that have led up to this sort of departure from the corporation and the group. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to be a fly on the wall.
And we'll find out.
Yeah, fly on the wall, autobiography, something along those lines would be quite good. I can see potentially Amazon Prime doing like a sort of rivaling sort of docuseries inside F1, as much as sort of Netflix is like, yeah, look at us, we're doing F1. And we're like, no, nah, not quite. And Amazon just sort of goes, here's what really happened with Michael Massey. And you sort of go, take my money.
You just have like blacked out people and you can't see who's there in the background talking about it.
Yeah, just sort of completely sort of anonymous interviews with someone who's clearly got a slight Australian accent and is like, we had a motor race, Toto. We went motor racing. It's sort of like, no, I know exactly who that is.
I guess, well, I mean, they really like, I mean, of what happened, obviously it's probably, you know, it is his fault. That's why he probably stepped down. But I don't think all the blame is on Michael Massey. Obviously, he's not the only one in the room, right? And but I feel like,
it's just
like
the one that everyone recognized and saw and was on the radio. And it's very easy to have the scapegoat.
Exactly. I felt like FIA was like, okay, it's him. He missed out. Fire him. And, you know, he just tried to get rid of him. Well, probably the problem was bigger, you know, more people involved. And he just, you know, he was the star of the show and he took the blame for it.
He was essentially mutinied by the FIA and he lost out there. Yep. It's put into a small rowing boat with a musket with a single shot in it and a bottle of rum and sent out to sea. Exactly.
Someone's been watching Pirates of the Caribbean again recently.
Genuinely, I have actually finished watching the fifth one this morning for no apparent reason.
Completely away from that then, because we'll get down a rabbit hole if we're not careful. Alonso is not happy with the new regulations apparently and has called them a bit boring, which, what do we make of that?
But you're talking about the car regulations.
Yes.
I mean, it feels like something very Alonso to say, isn't it? He's always complaining about something. He's great. I love him. But yeah, I mean, cars are not more fun to drive compared to 10 years ago. And I'm not talking about Formula One. I'm even talking about Formula Three. If you drive a Formula Three car of 2012 and a Formula Three car of 2022, it's just horrible because the cars are heavier. You know, you've got less downforce and everything. So, but it's tough. That's the way it is, you know? And obviously, probably he says it's boring, but maybe it just doesn't suit his driving style as much. Probably that's it.
I wonder how much of it comes from frustration as well, because he's lost out on a massive chunk of points at various points this year, especially, say, like in Australia, where he could have got pole, yeah. And who knows what we could have got from him then. He might not have still won the race, but he could have finished higher than he obviously did. And Ocon is doing quite a good job as well in that car, so it's not as bad as McLaren, for example, with the big disparity between Lando and Daniel, but it's maybe heading that direction if we don't have a reversal of fortune soon.
I don't know if it's around that, but you know, but it just cars change and they suit more or less your driving style. And when they don't suit your driving style, you really have to work hard and change those little things to make sure that you're driving the way you're supposed to drive that car. You know, if you like light cars with a lot of downforce, you can't drive those cars the way you drive heavier cars with not much downforce. So probably he just says they're not fun to drive because he just does not enjoy it. And he has to really like work hard and focus to drive it the way it's supposed to drive and not drive it naturally. And I do understand that's frustrating, but you know, it is the way it is, you know, like,
Watch him turn around now and watch Wang win the Grand Prix this weekend out of nowhere and just suddenly decide that, oh no, I love these cars actually.
Yeah, that could happen. That could happen, you know. Yeah, that definitely could happen.
I mean, down a similar route. I mean, yeah, we've seen him really extract the most from that Alpine chassis, the A522, I think it is this year, isn't it? And it's proving to be a relatively capable car. It's taking the fight to McLaren. It's sort of putting itself up there as the top of the midfield. And I don't think it truly matches Alonso's driving style, but equally, I don't think it's just such a decent all-rounder that he's not feeling pushed by the car. He's not having to develop and learn a driving strategy to try and get the most from the car. He can sort of, at 8/10 of his ability, find the outer limits of that car. Whereas when you go back to something like the Ferrari F14T, horrendous car, absolute dog to drive, but he was getting points out of that pretty much every weekend. And he would have been, I think, because of his mindset of wanting a challenge and having to fight something to feel like he's won, that could be almost the regard as to why he finds the Alpine this year boring. If you put him in something like the Red Bull, which has slightly snappier tendencies, or the Mercedes, which doesn't quite have the right setup yet, he might find it fun, so to speak, because there's a challenge for him. But the Alpine is a great car. It's performing perfectly within its envelope and within sort of that field of the grid. But compared to his ability, it's not pushing him to the absolute maximum. And that means when there's those occasions where the car is set up right and the conditions are favourable at the right circuit, we're seeing these fantastic quali laps like we saw Australia and then obviously again in Canada. We saw Alonso absolutely on it because everything was right for the car. So his 10 out of 10 performance made complete sense. But I think that's similar but a slightly different approach to my mindset on this. I think it's a case of the car is great, but it could be better. And
good but not great, maybe.
Yeah, good but not great. And there's more scope to take Alonso to his upper limits as well.
Then in the final bit of news that we've got, which is just a bit of F2 news, David Beckman was going to step in for Jake Hughes this weekend because with his busy schedule, Jake Hughes got COVID, unfortunately. It's happened again, so we're just going to have to roll with that. So Van Amersfoort's going to have another driver there, but Beckman was in it, I think, in Silverstone, if I'm remembering correctly. So replacing Cordier at that time because of his race ban, which is a penalty point. So he's not doing too badly for an F3 driver. He had a lot more opportunities. So it'll be fun to see what he learned in Silverstone and how much further potentially he can get up the grid.
Yeah, some good opportunities cropping up for David Beckman at the moment. And it's, again, nice to see him get a race seat. It's tricky to say nice for him to get something while it's also at the sort of risk and downfall of Jake Hughes, who's had a fairly decent run of
things. Russell and Mercedes when Lewis got COVID. Yes. We want to see it, but not for this reason.
Yeah, it's, you don't want it to sound like you're wishing ill of the other driver. And he performed fairly well, given how little F2 time he's had when he was in Silverstone. So it'd be nice to have him a good chance to go. And again, France is a fairly safe circuit. He will have a proper chance to really push the car to its absolute limits without sort of too many repercussions. So it'll be a good opportunity for him to show what he can do in an F2 seat and hopefully line himself up for something a little more competitive next year. We'll wait and see, but yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, his what he did in Silverstone was great, and Silverstone is one of the toughest races in the calendar, you know, way more, you know, difficult than Austria, let's put it this way. France is technical, but a little bit easier, so for sure he can do well, but it's not easy stepping into different cars like just like that, so yeah, we'll see.
But like you say with Silverstone, if you make a mistake there, it's going to be more costly. Whereas France, you've kind of, you're not safe, but you can get away with it slightly more. It's not going to maybe impact you as much.
Yeah. What I find difficult about Silverstone is about momentum. Like you feel like you're driving three different tracks in one. Because you get in the first part where you really have to be very patient. And, you know, because these long, slow corners where you just have to pick up the throttle that right moment and bring in that right speed. So it's all about patience. Then obviously you go to from Copse to Meggetts Beckett's where you just have to send it. And then you go back to the last sector where you mustn't mess up what you did up to land. So it just, it's hard to feel, build a momentum. It's hard to set up a car. And so it's a tough track, and for sure Paul Ricard will be easier, but then one thing about going to easier tracks is that they're not just easy for you, they're easier for the others, so the grid will be pretty close.
Catch 22.
It's time for some facts about the French Grand Prix. And when did we last go to the French Grand Prix? The Grand Prix in France, the Grand Prix at Circuit Paul Ricard. It was 2021 after a hiatus in 2020 for Miss Rona. And how did that last Grand Prix pan out? Well, it was fairly dull, actually, but it was an interesting strategy battle where Red Bull figured out the kind of chaos they could cause with Sergio Perez if they supported him and gave him a fair chance to do things. Winds caused a few issues for drivers on track, and the forecast this week hints at some mild gusts, but we'll get to the weather properly in a second. The question is, who does the track favour historically? Based off of last year's running, it's not going to be a good weekend for the Scuderia. Mercedes powertrains ran well last time, so we'll see how that pans out, especially with the Ferrari power units going through, or rather enduring, an ongoing spate of reliability issues. More long term, there's only been three prior runnings of the French Grand Prix at Paul Ricard in this layout. It's 2-1 Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton over Max and Red Bull. But wind the clock backwards, as there's been prior at Paul Ricard, just with different layouts. Prost has won four times at the track, so there's good favour for French drivers in that regard, especially when you add in René Arnoux, who won for Renault in 1982. Weather, what can we expect? 29 degrees Celsius and dry across the weekend. It's looking like very good weather indeed. However, the high temperatures could see tyre degradation come into play and give us another strategy battle. Those who have a chassis that is kind of their tyres, or if they are rubberphilic drivers, might have an edge.
So which on-track battle should we be looking out for going into this weekend? Well, if Ferrari can keep their engines not on fire and running for long enough, then they might be able to take the fight to Red Bull. Most of the exits onto the long straights are gently tapering, so Red Bull will do better than in Austria because they seem to be struggling with the tight exits of the slow corners. So potentially France will offer them a slightly better running, although there is the tight exit of turn 15 where Ferrari might just have the edge down the start finish line. So that's certainly one to look out for. And as usual, still, there is the sort of chasing battle of Mercedes, McLaren and Alpine. And now technically we could also include Haas into that group. If they have a good weekend of reliability, they might be able to get close to the points. Speaking of points and results, we'll move on to our predictions. So Timo, do you want to open up with your pole position prediction?
I will. I'm gonna stick with Charles Leclerc again. I think it's a good race last time, exactly what we need, and I think he's gonna carry that momentum forward. He's gonna get pole position. So I just to do well. He needs a good solid few races before the summer break, and pole is the perfect way to start that one. What about yourself?
I'm also going down the Charles Leclerc line. It's not something I've mentioned in the history section, but I believe Monégasques have a good reputation for driving at Circuit Paul Ricard, or at least French Grand Prix, if you dig historically. So I reckon Charles will have a good go of it. And again, his qualifying pace has been pretty phenomenal. The Ferrari is quick. They'll probably turn the engine up to just below bursting point, hopefully. And we'll see a competitive time from him. And hopefully he'll be able to convert that into something special when it comes to the podium.
I do agree with you guys. Yeah, I do agree with you guys. I think Charles Leclerc will get it. Plus, there's, you know, Haas has been very fast the last race, and they've been, what they say is that they've been testing something for Ferrari. So, like, you try it. They should have probably tried it as well, because otherwise maybe it would have not exploded for Carlos Sainz. But yeah, so I do think Charles Leclerc has a good chance on pole. It's going to be very close. I do think it's.
It does make you think, if Ferrari are giving Haas stuff to test out, then what the hell are Red Bull giving AlphaTauri? Because AlphaTauri not having a good time with whatever they're being given.
I don't think if they're going to give them actually anything, to be honest. But this is what they say. In that case, obviously Ferrari is in a very good place. So I do think Charles Leclerc will get the pole. I do.
Who's on your podium for this Grand Prix, Jesse?
My podium for this Grand Prix, it's not going to be a Charles Leclerc Grand Slam. I don't think he's going to lead every lap of the race. He's going to have to fight it back through the final sort of third of the race. I reckon Ferrari's strategy will do a bit dirty and he'll have to do a big push. But I can still see him winning the race. Second place will likely go to a Red Bull, but I can't see it being Verstappen. I can see his fortune changing. So I'm going to go second place. And then a nice little uplift for Sainz after last race week, third place for him on the podium.
I do think it's going to be tough on strategy, just because it's going to be very hot. And so Deg will be for sure something important there. And it's going to be very hot. So it's not going to be an easy strategy. And that's why I'm not going to go for Ferrari winning, because they just messed them all up, unfortunately. So I do see
a Verstappen. She's Italian, she can say it.
Yeah. I mean, just like Red Bull just is way better on that. And I do think it will help them a lot in a tough race like France. So I do think they'll win with Verstappen. But I do expect a 2-3 from Ferrari eventually.
Which round are you going to?
I don't see Mercedes being there, nor Perez. So, yeah.
Which way round are you putting those Ferraris?
Depends how much they argue. I don't know. I don't know. It really just, it depends. It all depends on which strategy they miss up most.
Oh, so stereotypically, that's going to be Charles. So it's going to be Sainz second.
Yeah, Charles. So 3-3. And obviously, I think Carlos Sainz is trying to prove a point here. So he's not going to like give position and all of that. So, which I see is pretty fair. But
he's still in the championship fight. So until that proves otherwise, for whatever reason, why not absolutely send it and just prove that you can do it?
I mean, I think mathematically, everyone is far down as, like, I know Lewis is still in the championship fight, technically. It's unlikely, but mathematically, he's still there.
And I think he really thinks he can still do it. I mean, he's...
How smug is he going to be if he does, though?
Oh, wow, yeah.
I mean, as a Ferrari fan, it will hurt me so much.
Oh,
but
it would.
At the same time, it would be really nice to see, like, a huge redemption arc through the second half of the season for Hamilton to properly come back and just dominate.
Don't get my hopes up like this, Jesse. Don't do it to me.
Yeah.
It would be nice to see it happen, despite me being a deep-down Charles Leclerc Ferrari fanboy. So, speaking of coming back with a vengeance and some speed, you've gone for Carlos Sainz's fastest lap.
I mean, I was going to do my podium first, but yeah.
Oh, you haven't done your podium. Yes, your podium. I'm going so fast, I skipped your podium. Your podium, please.
After last week's success, because Vicky, you might not know, but I tend to curse drivers on this podcast. I don't mean to, but whatever I say, it doesn't generally go well for them.
Okay.
And I'm trying to work this out as trying to find a strategy to make it work out a little bit here. So to help Ferrari last week, I said Max would win. He didn't, and it worked out well, because if I'm treating the logic as if Max wins and I predict it, I get points on here. And if he doesn't, then it's good for the championship, because then Ferrari or someone else will. So I'm going to try this again and say Verstappen gets the win. Hamilton in second. He's fueled by those three podiums he's got in a row now. I know I'm a bit crazy, Vicky. Just let me get it out of my system. And then Leclerc in third. So still get a solid haul of points. And what about, if we get that, we'll go about crazy for Paris? Yeah, we all kind of neglected him a bit, haven't we?
Yeah.
I didn't neglect him. Fourth
or fifth. He's still there, but just in the background. Although you can't have that as a proper addiction, Jesse. I'm not having that. I do bad enough in this as it is.
Well, Perez comes fourth or fifth. That's not wild enough for a wild prediction.
Oh no, don't worry, it's not.
We will say predictions wise, while she isn't on the podcast, we will be including Ellie May's predictions as well, because she is currently leading the predictions point scoring battle at the moment. So it'd be unfair to cut her so ruthlessly. But yeah, you'll find all of our predictions in a little graphic somewhere on our social media feeds later, which will include the fastest lap, which I've already teased for Timo. You were going Carlos Sainz.
I forgot to say, reiterating what Vicky said earlier, he's out to prove a point. He's going to be back with a vengeance a bit. And to do that, why not get an extra point for fastest lap while he's at it?
It's not bad. I'm going to go quite left field with my fastest lap, though. Okay. So he's done weekends back-to-back with points. I reckon he's going to go the step further this weekend. It's Mick Schumacher, baby. He's going fastest lap. Because I don't know, Haas are going to do something radical and trim a lot of downforce off, and that's going to work for France. It might be a bit slidey through the corners, but sort of...
I would love to see that.
With both previous times he's come into the points, it's either been on a circuit that's quite green from rain, or in Austria, again, kind of a green circuit from a lot of rain earlier on in the weekend. So low lateral grip, I think, seems to be the success story for Mick Schumacher. Potentially a lack of downforce through the faster turns in Sector 3 at France might be his route to success, or at least fastest lap. So, yeah, call it top 10 and fastest lap point for Mick Schumacher.
And it might even rain. You know, it hasn't been raining for months. It will rain for Mick Schumacher before the race.
Not if you've looked at the predictions for Paul Ricard.
I know, I'm joking. Fastest lap... I'm just going to go with Leclerc, because as he's probably going to have everything messed up for at least he's going to get his silly fast.
They'll give him soft tires just when he doesn't need them, so at least he'll get a point out of it.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to give him the fast lap. But I do think that Haas could even put them both in points. Who knows?
That'd be quite. I want to see them doing better. We kind of went down a bit slightly after the first couple of races, and I want to see them get back up again now. It's the underdog story we want to see happen, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it'd be nice to see it happen. Mind you, speaking of underdog stories and slightly more crazy things, it's our wild predictions. These are things that generally would be a little bit out there, and it's weird still to think that we now classify Daniel Ricciardo finishing ahead of Lando Norris as a bit out there, but...
Yeah, I wanted to tie it back to the news from earlier, and he needs a good weekend when we all love him, despite reality not being kind to him or us at the moment. It's a tricky time to be a Daniel Ricciardo fan, so I'm just going to say he finishes ahead of Lando Norris, and I hope that's also in the points, but I'm also not brave enough to say that just yet. It's been going... suspiciously okay-ish for them, so you just got to finish ahead of Lando. That's all I'm after here.
I don't know, if we tail it back to my sort of who the track favours historically, Mercedes-powered teams usually do all right at Paul Ricard. So.
I mean, they did finish, I think, 5 and 6 last year, in the Grand Prix, if I remember correctly, because it was quite Mercedes-dominant tracks, I think. Lewis second, Valtteri fourth or third, and then there was the two McLaren, so...
Valtteri was fourth. There was the McLarens in the points. Both Aston Martins were in the points as well. So at least in late, it's certainly been a Mercedes power track. Yeah. Vicky, yours.
I'll say points, and I'll blame Jesse if it goes wrong. Can't go in the points.
Daniel Ricciardo finishes ahead of Lando Norris in the points. He doubles down on the spiciness. Vicky, have you got anything that could possibly go against that?
I'm going to go for sure Haas in points. Not with both, probably. I think that was a bit too optimistic. But
Haas in points, though? No, I can take Haas in points.
I can see it happening. I don't know if to put one for sure. I don't know if both cars.
There'll be a Haas driver in the points. Yeah.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's
for sure. I mean, at the rate it's going, Kevin... At the rate it's going, Kevin Magnussen seems to have a bad first luck or first lap luck, and there's a fairly tight bit of sector one. So, yeah, he might be fast, but if he has bad luck going through sector one, bit of a collision, it'll be on Mick to get in the points, which we now know he can do. Mind you, my fastest lap, not fastest lap, wild prediction, focus on the text. Alpine top five. So I can see in the top five drivers classification, there being at least one Alpine driver.
You're going for at least one. I was wondering when you say top five, that both of them are like four and five, or how brave are you feeling?
Not quite that brave to basically go Alo Oco in the four and five positions, but I can see at least one of them being up there. And again, like I said, French circuit, French drivers tend to do well. We've got Esteban Ocon on really good form at the moment as well. Ocon's been performing quite nicely.
You're going to put a name to it?
You always make me sort of specify things and it never pans out well, but my predictions have been
stronger.
I always
lose points on this anyway. I've got to try and at least do damage limitation if I can.
But the past few times where my predictions are on a good streak, okay, right, yeah, Ocon top five. I'll change Alpine to Ocon top five. And watch me get no points this weekend.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a crazy enough point to end it with for this episode. And we'll be back next week with our French Grand Prix review. Not because that's not this episode, as we now know. And Jesse, where can people find you in the meantime?
In the meantime, you can find me all across the internet. I'm on Instagram, Twitter as at Jesse on Cars. You can find possibly this YouTube channel if you're not listening to this on YouTube as also Jesse on Cars. And if you like print media, I'm a big supporter of that and write for Classic Car Weekly. So you can go and actually buy a physical newspaper with my work in it. I'm trying to think what's going to be in this one. News about 124 mile Mark 1 Ford Escort. That's coming out on Wednesday. So that'll be out on shelves if you can buy that.
Vicky, where can people find you in the meantime?
In some racetrack, hopefully soon. And yeah, all around the web, just like Jesse and you. So Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, also YouTube. Actually do YouTube. And
yes,
hopefully
I'll
do something in British language soon. English language, not British language. Well, yeah. Sorry.
Language has slightly fewer consonants in it. That's the difference. You sort of drop a few consonants. It's British.
And change. Like, this is American and this is English, right? So
that's quite accurate.
You're on for our impressions episode.
Yeah, exactly. So it's pretty easy at Wikipedia. And yeah, you can see me there.
And Timo, where can the people find you if they even want to find more of you, which they should, to be fair?
Oh, they always want to find more of me and everywhere, so that's a good thing. So that's extra helpful. Yeah, I mean, I've got articles over on Is It Fast and Paddock Sorority, and then I've got my motorsport interview series on the curbs, which there is an episode with Vicky on there from last year, so you can go back and listen to that. And yeah, Instagram, TikTok, surprisingly. And also over on the Nitro RX podcast, which at the moment we've got another episode of that coming out soon with a nice, fun interview with another driver. So keep your eyes peeled for that one as well.
I was going to say, your On the Curb series, your latest episode was with Nabila Tejpar, who we only had on the podcast not too long ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and who is also the co-host for the Nitro RX podcast. It's a small world. So.
It's a small world, or we just don't know a lot of people. We just keep recycling guests between all of our different things.
Well, I'll be happy to come and be recycled and come back. So put it this way.
That sounds fantastic. We should, of course, mention our co-host in Absienta, Ellie May, who can be found on the Undercut Podcast's Instagram account with her takeaways from each race. We've sort of spread them out a bit at the moment because we've obviously had a bit of a gap between race weeks. So hopefully her Austria takeaways, her key takeaways, should be out later this week. She also runs the TikTok account where we sometimes have content going up. So should probably go find us on TikTok too.
Apart from that, that is pretty much us done for this week. Like we said, we'll be back for a French Grand Prix review next week, so keep your eyes peeled for that. And thanks for listening, watching today, and thanks again, Vicky, for coming onto the show.